As we continue tonight, I'm going to ask Travis to give me chart number 14. What a wonderful discussion. What a worthy opponent is my friend Pat here in this discussion. This quote is taken from the debate Brother Donahue mentioned in Nashville not long ago, March of this year. And Pat Donahue says, and I quote from his tape, lesson was taped, "The building that's paid for," this is verbatim, in a parenthetical explanation, I'm going to explain what he's talking about, the church treasury. "With that money can be used to facilitate preaching the gospel within our judgment." Within our judgment, if it facilitates that, then that is allowed. That's the problem with this particular doctrine. Our judgment, my friends, is the source of our division. Not what a thus saith the Lord is. You notice, as my good friend Brother Donahue went through his material, often he'll say, "I think, I feel." No, what does the Lord say? We want a thus saith the Lord. We are going to affirm a thing as I have affirmed tonight, continually proving, and it has not yet been disproven. We've made our case. We've proven that the church has such authority. You know, Brother Donahue told us, admittedly, in this discussion, he doesn't have a clue as to what Jude is talking about with the love feast. Then what in the world is he doing trying to affirm that it is not a meal as we come together? Now, 1 Corinthians 11. Let's turn in our Bibles. This is a Bible discussion. God's Word is the authority. 1 Corinthians chapter 11. We have a discussion here beginning in 17. "Now in this that I declare unto you, I praise you not, that when you come together, not for the better, but for the worse. First of all, when you come together in the church, I hear that there be divisions among you, and I partly believe it. For there must be also heresies among you, that they which are approved may be made manifest among you. When you come together, therefore, into one place, this is not to eat the Lord's Supper." Question: why was the church of Christ located in the city of Corinth coming together, as is taught from the inspired epistle of 1 Corinthians 11? Answer: they were coming together in an assembly for worship, not in an assembly for benevolent purposes, not an assembly for edification in that sense, separate from the edification one receives in his worship, which is not the only source of edification. Question: what assembly? Answer: the worship assembly governed by John 4, 23 and 24. They must, the Bible says, my friends, it is absolutely necessary to worship our God in spirit and in truth, and the Corinthians violated it. And Pat, I'm afraid that your judgment is not the authority. It is not a thus saith the Lord. Pat started with 22, I believe. Can we look at that? A church paves its parking lot at the cost of $40,000 because it falls into what category? Did my opponent not say all three? Oh, I'm afraid my opponent wasn't here last night, because Tommy got after me last night talking about that water fountain for benevolent purposes. Did he not? When I put the water fountain in the category of benevolence, we're talking about the same principle. Again, judgment, individual judgment that is not founded, rooted deeply into the Holy Writ, is not our authority tonight. He went then to his 36, if we may use that as well. Restrooms and kitchens are not parallel. Restrooms are provided to facilitate the command to assemble. Hebrews 10:25, we have the command to assemble. Friends, restrooms aren't essential to assembling. They are not a necessity. Then he says, well, you know what? We don't need songbooks. If you've ever been to the Mountain City Church of Christ, you better need a songbook. You're not going to worship God. You see, that is facilitating our worship. I'll tell you tonight that this isn't parallel with the songbook arguments. We're not going to be able to worship at Mountain City without that songbook. We don't have these hymns memorized. Maybe they did this in the first century. Yea, as inspiration would guide some and teaching the hymns. But friends, what about restrooms? We still don't have them in. We still don't have that authority. They're not essential to our meeting together. Kitchens and a social meal. You know what? He didn't show us anything about Jude 12, did he? No, he said, you didn't answer these points about Jude 12. I apologize for not knowing what his Jude 12 chart was. If you know it, Tommy, you might put it up. And if not, that's all right. Because you'll remember as we looked at his chart, what did he use barns for? Well, he said Barnes tells us that that's the Lord's Supper. Did he not? Barnes, says that it is talking about the Lord's Supper. Friends, I showed you that that wasn't the case. I didn't weave and dodge and do the Passover over this. We're not done with this yet. We are not done with this as of this moment. Let's look at one of the charts, Travis, that you have, and it will be 19. Number 19. What is the love feast? Oh, I'm a lover of the lexicon here, Bauer's lexicon. Let me tell you why. Because you know what? I'm a student of history. And dear people, the New Testament was not written in a vacuum. The New Testament was written in a cultural setting. And Bauer's lexicon examines the material that's available from the Hellenistic period. How were these words used? What did they mean? Bauer's lexicon tells us, and you'll find this quote on page 6, a common meal eaten by early Christians in connection with their church services for the purpose of fostering and expressing brotherly love. Let's look at the historical setting. Perhaps since you don't know a whole lot about Jude and what he's saying here, let's go and take a history lesson. The Didache shows that a meal preceded the Lord's Supper, and that's what Paul's dealing with. You see, he's telling them you violated worship by bringing that so close in that you're violating the Lord's Supper. If you're going to do that, just don't do it at all. That's not a love feast. But it also shows us, come down a little bit there, son, that a meal preceded the Lord's Supper inasmuch as prayer was offered for the emblems after being filled. The Ignatian epistles, about 110 AD, we're in the second century, show that the agape feast and the Lord's Supper were still closely connected. Moving into the third century, by Tertullian's day, we have the church in the West still observing the agape feast, but not before the Lord's Supper. They've moved it back. They've got a problem coming in here. Yet the church in the East still have the agape feast connected closely to the time frame of the Lord's Supper. But not for much longer. They're going to go the way the West is going. Why was the agape feast disconnected from the Lord's Supper? It is thought that the Catholic idea of the sacrifice of the Mass and the mystery surrounding it caused the agape feast demise. And good people, the non-institutional Church of Christ wants to keep that thing dead. Yet we've proven tonight from the Bible that we have authority for the agape feast. The church did it. And my friend is telling us tonight that we can't do it. Paul said, don't you have houses in which to eat and drink? We don't have our common meal in the assembly. Yet my friends are sitting here tonight drinking fluids. They have glasses of water with them here during the discussion in an assembly where the gospel is being taught, and that's the purpose of our coming together tonight. My friends, is not consistency such a wonderful jewel? Oh, the clouds are dark tonight, as this indeed is a gray area. Incidentals. You know, he has a problem with that, with the incidentals. We like it, I guess. We like the toilets. We like the water fountain. They're incidentals. We like brethren eating if they're working and they're hungry. Yet the Bible says, if you're hungry, what? Eat at home. We're going to force it into that mold. And doesn't the Bible say something about drinking as well? Yet we can have an incidental drinking. The Bible didn't say incidental drinking. says, do you not have houses in which to eat and to drink? Let me ask a question here. Where is there authority in the New Testament for the church to pay for the preacher's son to play on his computer? The church is being charged for that. The church is footing the bill for a social activity, but you know what? We have the same problem. The same problem that he's trying to force his view and say, you know what, you've got this. And apparently in showing all of the parallels he showed with the Super Bowl and these kinds of things, and going off into that gymnasium thrust, he's got the same problem, friends. And you know what? We can't deal with the problem until we recognize that we have a problem. He has the same problem because, as we have already pointed out tonight conclusively, the water fountain is a source of social activity. It is a place in which gossip even takes place. It is a social gathering place. A number of years ago, I was asked to go preach the gospel at a non-institutional Church of Christ building. And you know what? I'll preach at the drop of the hat, and I'll drop the hat. I went. I'm going to go and preach the truth. And I went, and we dealt with these matters, but I could not understand the consistency of the brethren using the building, heating it up, socializing before worship, 30 minutes before worship, staying after worship. Friends, the only difference is that meal. And he says, you're paying for it out of the church. We are not. We bring that food from our homes. We don't charge the church. We don't charge the church. We're using the electricity. So do they. You see, they have the same problem. And it's time to do some telephone pole removing from our eyes. Open up and acknowledge what the Bible says. The Bible gives us authority. I don't have a problem. You know, it was alleged that I might have a problem with the toilets and the water. I don't have a problem with those things. Not a problem at all. And my opponent understands the same reasoning that I understand, yet he will not acknowledge the fact that it condemns his very arguments. He alleges, according to his doctrinal philosophies, that it's all right, you see, if you get the whole church together somewhere else. That's all right. Travis, how about giving me chart number 11?
You don't mind.
Chart number 11. Is it sinful for the church to eat in a church-owned building? So we have this idea. The church can come together according to their teaching. And Pat didn't deny this. Anything I said here, he agrees with this. But they do the same thing. Socialize. The church is being charged for these particular things. Let me have number 9 again, Travis. Number 9. Super Bowl parties and what have you. We're not teaching that we're going to have Super Bowl parties. But Pat has the same problem with which he seeks to charge me. We have a water fountain. It's a place of gathering. It's a place of socialization. And still, we're told that we have authority for this, but not for eating together. E4, please. Pat's argument will not allow the church as individuals to eat together in one place, because the local congregation is the church even when it is not assembled. Now, Pat said, I don't believe that. But he believes it. He's got a problem here, and let me tell you why. We're confused on this assembly of 1 Corinthians 11. We're confused about this assembly, so much so that if we have the church together 10 minutes after worship, we're pressing this according to the philosophical hermeneutical principles of the non-institutional Church of Christ into this mold. You've got the church violating this assembly. It is not the assembly of 1 Corinthians chapter 11. That was a worship assembly. We are not doing the same thing. So notice that we have this problem over the church. Friends, we've gone over this already. I'm the church, and I'm part of the local church outside of the assembly. And we have the church coming together. It's already the church. You see, we've got some confusion, and it centers around this assembly. What's it for? Who is the one who is confused? Who is the one having trouble with this? Let's look at his chart number 28, please. This could be figurative, not a literal myth, similar to 1 Corinthians 5:8. Barnes' note says that it's talking about the Lord's Supper. This could be a benevolent meal for the poor. And he quotes from Everett Ferguson. This term fits, this fits the term love feast very well. This could be the same as Acts 2:46, meals eaten at home by individual Christians. I guess what we could say is the early church met in homes, and it did, but not homes only. They met in homes, and oftentimes they would eat where they met. Is there a problem with that? What's the difference in that situation and what we're dealing with tonight? The only difference that he can press upon us is the church footing the bill for the lights, for the heat. So we're going to ask Brother Pat when he comes up here tonight if he has the same problem out on the church grounds. The church not being charged at all. Do we have the same problem if we let out our worship services and 5 minutes later we're going to be out under a nice cool shade tree and we're going to eat a meal together there? Do we still have the same problem, or is that different? And if we take that and move it 5 minutes later and we're down the road at Shoney's, you see, and the preacher was short-winded, so we're there before everybody else, is it the same problem? You see how all of this is clouded around that thinking that 1 Corinthians 11 is the assembly that we have when we're eating together. Friends, that's not what we're pressing tonight. That's not what we have proven in this affirmation, as we have demonstrated from the Bible that we have authority for this practice. And I didn't get up here and tell you I think or I feel or I don't have a clue as to what Jude is saying. I've looked at the historical evidence. I've examined the Bible. I've given you what the evidence indicates. And friends, that's a lot different than saying I think or I feel. You see, that is not authority for what we would do. Number five. Here's number five, I believe it was. Expedience. You know, we've gone over this and over this. Do you know why? Because that's all he's got. That's all he has. That's the whole leg upon which his argument leans. But yet we come back to this again and again. Why? Because it's always my judgment. I think, I feel. We can have what we want, you see, what we want to make our meeting houses comfortable. How about if we're going to press this kind of philosophy about charging the church? Would we not be better off then to use those dollars in evangelism and get away from paid parking lots? We don't need them. We don't need padded pews. I've been to Russia and preached the gospel at 40 below zero without heat, and people will come if they love the truth. They are not essentials. Friends, we have to get away from this lame argument that I think and I feel is all right. I've proved my case tonight. My opponent has not given you any Bible to disprove what I've said here in this affirmation. And that is his responsibility. And we're looking forward to him possibly getting on with that this evening and getting out of this emotional subjectivism. And emotionalism's all right if we base it on the thermostat of the Bible. But friends, I think and I feel is not the Bible. My judgment is not the Bible. I want some Bible answers. Thank you.
Again, I believe Darrell's doing a very good job. He's conducting himself as a perfect gentleman. He's debating the way it's supposed to be done. He's not trying to use tricks or debate tactics. He's just coming right out front with the issue and pressing his points, which he is supposed to do, and I appreciate that. He began by saying that, and I don't have the exact quote, but it was something like I had said in the previous debate, that we can use our money to facilitate preaching of the gospel and use our judgment in how to do that. And that's right, and he would agree with that. For example, we might support Tommy to come up here and preach the gospel in this debate. That would be a good thing to do, fine and dandy. He may try to use his judgment about whether to drive his car or to fly. That's a judgment matter, but they're both authorized. And you use their judgment. Like, for example, we need lighting in here. And so we use our judgment. What kind of lighting? If somebody were to pay $100,000 chandeliers in here, that would be pretty bad judgment. It's not that the lights are not authorized. You know, it's just that you use your judgment. Noah was told to build the ark out of gopher wood. How did he cut the gopher trees down? It'd be his judgment about whether or not to use the saw or the axe to cut it down. Either one would have been authorized. So within the two or three choices that we have that are authorized, we use our judgment. God expects to use wise and good judgment. He says, be not unwise, in Ephesians 5:17. But now, here's the difference with Daryl. He hasn't found the authority for the church social meal. We found authority for the church to preach the gospel. We found authority for the church to do benevolent work. We found authority for the church to assemble for spiritual purposes. But we haven't found the authority for the church social meal in the church building. And not only that, we've shown a passage that condemns the church eating the common meal in the assembly itself, whether or not it's in the building or under a tree. He says, Daryl says that he's proven his case. Well, with what, Daryl? The only two passages you brought up, as far as I can recall, that were supposed to prove your case. Now, you talked a lot about asking me for authority for restrooms and water fountains and such like that. But the only passages you used to prove your case are Jude verse 12, which the whole chapter, the whole book doesn't mention the word church. I believe that he's using the same reasoning as a Methodist in Acts 16:15. He can't prove that Jude verse 12 is talking about a church social meal. All it says is love feast. As far as I can tell, unless he proves otherwise, it could be talking about the Lord's Supper. It could be talking about a benevolent meal. We're not opposed to any of those. It could be talking about individuals eating together, Christians, individual Christians. We're not opposed to that. He hasn't ruled any of those out. He's doing just like the Methodists. Well, some households contain babies, therefore those babies were baptized. In Acts 16:15, that authorizes the baptizing of babies. He's doing exactly that. There is not one whit of difference. And the other passage he's used is 1 Corinthians 11, and that actually condemns the practice he upholds, and that is the church eating a common meal in the assembly. Now, he says it's not the assembly. We'll talk about that a little more in a moment. Put up number 34. Again, he went back to restrooms and water fountains. Now, how many times do we have to bring this up? And he still hasn't responded to this chart. Now, he didn't have to put the chart up here, just respond to the argument. You know, he still hadn't done it. I brought it up every speech. He's had responsibility and the opportunity to respond, but he just keeps coming back up and saying the same old argument. If restrooms are authorized, then the church social meal is. And I've responded to that in every speech, and he still just comes back and says the same thing. If restrooms are authorized, then the church meal is. Well, instead of just bringing up the same thing, Daryl, and saying the same sentence over and over, I've already responded to that. Why not reply? So according to his reasoning, the kids play chase in the parking lot after services, so that authorized the church ball team. So that's the same reasoning. You have the water fountain, therefore you can have a team, a church common meal. Teens discuss a popular movie out in the foyer. So therefore you can have a church movie theater. Well, I know you're opposed to that. I think you probably even said that in one of your speeches. But you didn't tell us why. Because the very same reasoning that would prove assuming a water fountain is okay would prove the church social meal, since you're drinking some water in one and you're eating in the other, no problem with the difference there. Let's just say you're eating in both cases. If eating at the water fountain is okay, therefore that proves the church social meal, having kitchens to facilitate that, then the movie theater is authorized because you can discuss the movie out in the foyer. Men talk about basketball in the foyer, that would authorize a church gymnasium. Women discuss recipes, that would authorize a church cooking school. My father-in-law, while we're working at the church building, instructs me on some construction and maintenance techniques. Therefore, you could have a church school on electrical wiring and plumbing. My father-in-law, if you do decide to have one, would be a good person to teach that, I'll tell you. The preacher's small son plays on the computer while he's waiting on his dad to go home. Well, according to his reasoning, you have a video game festival. There's not one whit of difference in his argument that would prove this from this. But he still hasn't responded to this. Tommy, raise it up. Deacon's wife listens to radio while cleaning the building, so she can drink out of the water fountain. That authorizes a kitchen to facilitate church social meals. Therefore, she listens to the radio while she's in the building, while she's cleaning the building. We could have a secular music concert. You can have the radio playing a song while you're working. Why can't you just invite the band Alabama to come in there and play and invite the public? Maybe get 2,000 or 3,000 or 5,000 people to come. The end justifies the means. You can have that Super Bowl party that he's opposed to, but according to your reasoning, you can have it. Preacher eats his lunch in the study, therefore you have a church social meal. No difference here. I rub my sore arm while I'm listening to Daryl's sermon, therefore you could have a church massage parlor. Same reasoning. And then he again makes the mistake that the only thing that is authorized are the things that are essential to accomplish something. He says you can get by without the restroom or the water fountain. Since you don't have to have those, therefore they're not authorized. Daryl, that's a mistake. When we're talking about what's authorized, you're not talking about things that you have to have. God says to do something, and under that umbrella comes the things that are authorized are the things that you can use to accomplish what he said. Like preaching the gospel. Go to preach the gospel. Go, authorizes. Riding a bike. Riding a car. Riding a plane. Do you have to go on a plane? No. According to his view, since you don't have to have a plane, it's not authorized. Therefore, if you do it, it's sin. Daryl, you're mixed up on that. You got it backwards. It authorizes flying in a plane to preach the gospel, riding a bike, going in a car, none of them. Not a single one of them do you have to do. The only thing you have to do is go. You can pick which way to go. And so you don't have to have a restroom, that's right, but it's still authorized. You don't even have to have a church building for that matter. You could just meet out in the field. So you don't have to have the church building, but it's authorized because he commanded us to assemble and you need a place. Songbooks are not essential. Now he may think the singing would be better with a songbook, but God does not look upon how good the melody is. He cares about the words. You don't have to have a songbook. Many churches in the first century did not. You don't have to have one. That doesn't mean they're not authorized. They help us sing. So they are authorized because God said to sing. Pews. You don't have to have those. Are they authorized? Yes, but you don't have to. You could stand up the whole time. But they make it more comfortable to come and have an assemble in the same way for the restroom, the water fountain. The carpet, you don't have to have that. You could just have a wood floor or dirt floor. You don't have to have it, but it's authorized. And that's because God commanded us to assemble. That requires a place. So when you know that you have to have a place, you choose. You can build a building. You can have a parking lot to facilitate people driving their cars to the church building. You can have carpet. You can have pews. It's authorized. Judgment comes into play. No, I'd be opposed to a $100,000 light chandelier. Not because the light's not authorized, but because it would be way too much money for what you need, just like at your own house. This projector is used as a tool for teaching. It's a great tool. It's manifestly authorized, but you don't have to have it. You can teach without it. Doesn't mean it's not authorized. Now do you understand, Daryl, how things are authorized? It's not because you have to have them. It's not because restrooms are essential that makes them authorized. It's because they're authorized. God told you that you could have them either through command, approved example, not disapproved example, by the way, or necessary inference. And then he brought up Jude verse 12, a bunch of commentaries, and he referred to this as historical evidence. Now, he in effect admitted he can't prove from the Bible, the book of Jude, that this is talking about church social meals. He says, I didn't guess about it. I went to historical evidence. You know what he means by historical evidence? Commentaries. You know, you can put commentaries on both sides of this question. As we've already pointed out, Barnes thinks it's talking about the Lord's Supper. Raise that problem. The International Standard Bible Encyclopedia says about Jude verse 12, a common table at which the wants of the poor were supplied out of the abundance of the rich. We're for that. That's benevolence. Now, if you're just going to line up commentaries and say they prove something, you can line up commentaries on both sides of every question. But notice what he did. He said, I went to historical evidence. You know what he meant by historical evidence? He didn't mean history in the Bible. He meant extra-biblical historical evidence. In other words, he's going to commentaries. And what is he admitting, in effect, when he has to do that? He said, I'm not going to guess about it. It's a church social meal. How do I know historical evidence? He means commentaries. And so you can prove your authority by commentaries. He admits Jude, he can't prove it from Jude verse 12, so we go to the historical evidence, commentaries. So, brethren, is that what you want to base your convictions and your practice on? He's admitted that the only way you can prove that church social meal out of Jude verse 12 is commentaries. And we got commentaries on both sides. We've got commentaries on four or five sides. We got commentaries saying it's the Lord's Supper, commentaries saying it's benevolence. I suppose there's some commentaries saying it's a church social meal. That's the ones he brought up, put up there. Is that the way you prove the Bible, like the Baptist? You prove your position by commentaries? We don't do that. We don't rely upon quote, historical evidence. The only historical evidence we use is the Bible. That's the only history we use. Anything you can't prove by the Bible, we don't practice. Because it's not me having a non-institutional hermeneutical principle either. It's because passages like Colossians 3:17 teach that whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord. If we don't have authority for it, we don't do it. We don't say, well, we don't have authority for restrooms, but we're going to do it anyway. Therefore, we don't have authority for the kitchen. We're going to do it anyway. We don't say, I can't prove this by the Bible. Therefore, I'm going to prove it by historical evidence, meaning commentaries. We don't do that. If we can't prove it by the Bible, we don't do it. There is no non-institutional hermeneutical principle here. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 34, let's just read that. You tell me if this is a hermeneutical principle. This is nothing that complicated. All you've got to do is read what Paul said, believe it, and accept it. It's plain and simple. No hermeneutical principles or discussion is necessary. If any man hunger, let him eat at home. Now, that's no hermeneutical principle. That's reading it and accepting it. And if you can't read and accept that, then we're not on the same page. And then he mentioned, well, we pay for the food. We're just using the building. There, would you oppose it if the church paid for the food? I know for a fact that there are some churches that do pay for the food, but I suppose most of them don't. I want to know, would you oppose it if the church paid for the food? I don't think you would. Therefore, if you wouldn't, why would you bring that up? It would only be logical to bring that up if you were opposed to it if the church paid for the food. But I have a feeling that you would not oppose it, a church common meal in the church building, even if the church paid for the food. I don't think you would. Then why'd you bring that up? Put it number 35. But you can tell us tomorrow night, and then I'll know for sure. And this brings us the idea of multi-purpose buildings. He thinks, well, so if the church doesn't pay for the food, we can use the building. It's only the lighting and everything. Well, why don't we just build a church auditorium big enough, and then after worship is over, we'll just convert it to a gymnasium. You know, we're just going to be using the lighting and all that. Why don't we just build the baptistry just a little bit bigger, and then when services are over, we can use it for a swimming pool. Well, after all, we'd only be using the heat and the lighting. The church wouldn't be paying for anything. The swimmers would come in for free. They'd provide their own bathing suits and everything like that. It's only the heat and the lighting that we'd have to pay for. Why can't we do that? We've already got this big pool here. Why don't we just swim in it? That's his reasoning. His reasoning would call for a church swimming pool. Why not have the church Super Bowl party? If the church doesn't pay for the TV, why not have it there? It's just the electricity and the heating. If you bring in, somebody brings their own big screen TV in. Why not have that church Super Bowl party on Sunday afternoon, January 31st, or whenever it is? Well, it's just paying for the lighting and the heating. Well, the reason is, I know it's a small amount of money if it's only the lighting and the heating. It's not authorized. That's why you can't do it. You violate Colossians 3:17. If something's not authorized for the church to do, you shouldn't even spend one penny on it. Not one penny if it's not authorized. It doesn't matter whether it's $40,000 or one penny. It'll still be wrong. The church is not authorized to play ball, swim, or watch TV, nor are they authorized to eat the church social meal. The only passages he gave was Jude verse 12, and then he knew he couldn't prove it from Jude verse 12, and so he gave us historical evidence, meaning commentaries. It's not authorized, and then he used 1 Corinthians 11 to try to show it was authorized. Well, that passage condemns church social meals. And then he said, well, it's how Pat feels. No, Colossians 3:17, there's no authority for it. How much time, Wesley?
You got about a minute.
Put up number one.
Right, you got about a minute.
Okay.
I'm sorry, 6 minutes.
6 minutes, thank you. This is the reason I'm opposed to using the church building for these church social meals. Now, to help you understand again my position, I don't believe 1 Corinthians 11 condemns using the building for church social meals per se. It only condemns eating a common meal in the church assembly. Now, Daryl and I may disagree a little bit on what the church assembly is, but let me say this, Daryl. You can't have an assembly of the church and then just say, let's not call it the assembly, therefore we can have women teach in there or speak, and therefore we can have people eat common meals. Let's just have an assembly but not call it the assembly. You say, it's either assembly or not. You can't just not call it the assembly and then allow the women to speak. It's still a violation of 1 Corinthians 14, 34, and 35, even if you say it's not the assembly. So you can't just define the assembly by what you call it. It either is the church assembly or it's not. And if it's the church assembly, 1 Corinthians 11 says you ought not eat a common meal in it. Okay? But that's not why I'm opposed, per se, to churches eating common meals in the building. Let's say it's after the assembly. That nobody's required to come. You're just going to come at 4 o'clock if you want to. and eat in the building and have a meal together at the church building. It's not because of 1 Corinthians 11, if it's really not the assembly, because 1 Corinthians 11 only condemns it in the assembly. It's because it's not authorized, you see. As far as I know, the Bible only authorizes the church to perform these three works. Preaching the gospel, and I don't see any need to break that down into evangelism and edification. There's no need to. It's the gospel either way. Helping needy saints. That's benevolent work. Worship assemblies. Okay? Now, there may be another category in the Bible. You know, we come up with these lists to help teach people. We might leave something off the list. If Daryl can find a fourth item to put on this list, church social meals, if he can find that, or a fifth item, whatever, gymnasiums, then we'll be in business, won't we? As far as I know, these are the only three. If you find another one, then I'll accept it, but it has to be in the Bible or I won't. But now, does that church social meal with the kitchen and everything, where they're just socializing, that coming up preaching the gospel? No. Helping the needy saints? No. Worship assemblies? No. What category does it come under, Daryl? Now, I think you agree with me on these categories. I don't think you think there is a fourth one. But, and if you do agree with me, which category does it come under? I want to know. Now, you either got to tell me which category it comes under, or you got to tell me what the other category is that it does come under. One of the two. Now, this is why I'm opposed to that, using the church building. You brethren, why are you opposed to that Super Bowl party in the church building? That's the reason, isn't it? They come under one of those categories. The Bible doesn't authorize it, either through command, approved example, or necessary inference. Why are you opposed to having a church swimming pool? You socialize there. Why are you opposed to it? Why are you opposed to having a golf course, church golf course? You can socialize. You can talk about the Bible. You can talk about the Bible at that church social meal. You can talk about the Bible while you're playing the golf. So why are you opposed to having that church golf course? Why are you opposed to these things? Why are you opposed to having that church checker tournament? Isn't it because the Bible authorizes these things that the church is to do, and it doesn't fall under one of these categories? Isn't that the reason? Then I ask you, I beg of you, why can't you see the same thing on the church social meal? It doesn't fall under one of those categories. As a matter of fact, to be consistent, now Daryl doesn't believe this, the consequences, but to be consistent, if you enter in social activities into the church's work like this, then consistently you could not rule any of those out. And that's why our more liberal brethren have gone where they are. How do you think those gymnasiums came about? They didn't start out with gymnasiums. In the 1950s, there probably wasn't a single Church of Christ in the United States that had a gymnasium. I may be wrong about that, probably not a one. But you know how it started? Church started having those fellowship halls. Go back to, you know, started having the fellowship hall. Then the brethren started being consistent. You know, if it's not wrong to provide for church social meals, provide facilities for that, why can't we do it for basketball? If you can do it for eating, why not for basketball? You see the difference? You see that it's the same thing? That's where it came from. Now, that doesn't prove the church social meals are wrong. That just proves that your more liberal brethren are more consistent than you are. If you can have these church social meals when they're not authorized, you can do any of that stuff. If there's another category, socializing, then you could do anything that would facilitate the individual Christians or the church socializing. You can socialize at a Super Bowl party. You can socialize at a basketball tournament. You can socialize at a golf tournament. You can socialize at a horse race. As long as you don't gamble, there'd be nothing wrong with it. Church can provide any of that. Why can't you see that's the same thing? Now, why does the Bible show that this is wrong? First of all, for clarification, 1 Corinthians 11 shows that it is wrong for the church to eat a common meal in the church assembly. Now, you can't have a church assembly and just say it's not and then go in and have a common meal. But that aside, let's suppose it's really not a church assembly. It's really not. People come, they just volunteer to come, they don't have to come, has nothing to do with being a church assembly. 1 Corinthians 11 wouldn't condemn it. But it would be wrong because it's not authorized. Colossians 3:17 says, whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus. It's not authorized, therefore we can't do it. Now we can't guess about it, we can't go to historical evidence, I mean non-extra-biblical historical evidence. We have to prove our practices by the Bible. Just like we demand from instrumental music, we demand that they prove instrumental music. We say, you can't go to historical evidence. You've got to go by the Bible. Thank you very much, and I so appreciate you coming. Again, I want to thank everybody for being here.
come back tomorrow at 10 a.m. or at 2 if you can't make the 10 a.m. session. We will continue this discussion tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. and then finish the other part of this debate tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m. Come back and bring somebody with you, make some invitations, and come back. I apologize also, I did not mention earlier that we are taping the debate, audio cassettes. If you would like a copy of those, let me know. I have a card for you to put your address on. We will send those to you. In just a couple of minutes, we're going to ask Brother Jimmy Knupp, if he would, to word a prayer for us, and we will dismiss. I think that's all that needs to be said. Thank you, Brother Darrell, Brother Pat. I think we've shown again that we still can be gentlemen and carry on the debate. Brother Knupp.
Father in heaven, we're thankful for